The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The official leader of the opposition. The leader of the official opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, the official Speaker of the House. I appreciate that. Mr. Speaker, today the Liberals on the House of Assembly's HR Committee used their majority to block a request to have the Freedom of Information Commissioner appear before a committee of this House to answer questions from members of the legislature. This action directly contradicts the words of the Premier, as he used them in describing his own throne speech, where he said, and I quote, "Putting Nova Scotians first begins with an open and accountable government," and I will table that for the benefit of the House. My question to the Premier, how is blocking access to the Freedom of Information Commissioner an example of open and transparent government?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. What had happened today, committee, Mr. Speaker, unbeknownst to our party, maybe the Democratic Party knew, the Conservative Party brought forward this to the agenda. It was not shared with other members of the committee. I would encourage him to share that with the caucuses. They could go back and determine whether or not the FOIA pop officers should sit.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the whole point of the committee this morning was to set the agenda, where all parties, as the Premier well knows, come forward with agenda items for future meetings, Mr. Speaker. But I'm happy to hear the Premier's answer. If he has no problem with the Freedom of Information officer appearing before a committee of the House, he now has an opportunity to say so. I'd like to ask the Premier, leadership starts at the top. Will he instruct the Liberal members on this committee to reverse course and allow, of all things, the Freedom of Information officer to freely answer questions of a committee of this legislature?
Here, here. The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind all members of this House that every member of this House that was duly elected to represent their constituencies. Unlike the leader of the Conservative Party, I have no intention of telling my members what to say, do, or think.
Oh, yeah. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary. And I just want to remind you that we can't get too deep into committee of the House here. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess the Premier had a chance to express his own view as to whether the Freedom of Information officer should be free to come to a committee of the legislature and face questioning. I still am not sure where he stands himself on this, Mr. Speaker, but fact of the matter is, actions will speak louder than words. Is it the policy of the Liberal government to allow the Freedom of Information officer to appear before a committee of this House, yes or no? And if it is, will he see to it that the actions follow those words?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I am going to continue to allow the committees of this House to do the work, and I encourage all members of every committee, Mr. Speaker, to bring forward their ideas and who they may want to see before those committees, and then the members of those committees will decide who appears.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, on March of 2012, the Premier said that government shouldn't be trying to make Imperial Oil competitive by taking money away from the municipality and giving the company a tax break if it's not prepared to give every other business owner in Nova Scotia the same break. But, Mr. Speaker, last April, the Premier changed a law to give Imperial Oil a $1 million tax break, And today we've learned the Liberal government has laid the groundwork so the Irving Shipyard can also get a municipal tax break. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is, why is the government changing laws so large corporations can get tax deals that aren't available to every other business owner in the province, as he asserted should be the case in 2012?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure what the leader of the Democratic Party is talking about. The HRM requested that we make an amendment to the charter, Mr. Speaker, as the leader of the Democratic Party would know. We have made no such tax deals with large corporations. Mr. Speaker, everything this government has done, Mr. Speaker, has been done in the best interest of all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my supplementary question to the Premier is this. Prior to the election, the Liberal Party spent thousands of dollars on ads promising an end to tax breaks for corporations. But, Mr. Speaker, in the last week, the Liberal government announced a $30 million tax rebate program for large manufacturers, and now they're allowing the Irving Shipyard to get a municipal tax break as well. So my question for the Premier is this. Why did he have a change of heart when it comes to big businesses' tax breaks?
The Honourable Premier.
Actually, Mr. Speaker, I think what the ad that the leader of the Democratic Party was talking about a year ago was that we were going to end, Mr. Speaker, handing out free money to corporations. It's exactly what we did, Mr. Speaker, when we came to office. Mr. Speaker, I know the Honourable Member represents part of all of Irving Shipyard. If she does not believe that Irving Shipyard should get a tax break, she should go directly and speak to the Mayor of HRM, because they're the ones that are going to deliver it to them if they get one, not us.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I guess when a previous government or governments do these kinds of things, it's corporate welfare. But when this crowd do it, it's creating conditions for business to succeed, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 1 year into his mandate, when it comes to economic development, the Premier has shown where his allegiance lies. Under the Liberal government, the small business tax rate has not changed, but he has given tax breaks to large manufacturers, Irving Oil, and now Imperial Oil. So my question to the Premier is this. Why has he abandoned his election promise to place small business owners at the front of the line when it comes to government incentives?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to inform her and all members of this House. We've doubled, Mr. Speaker, the small business loan that's distributed on behalf of government by the credit union. Mr. Speaker, from $25 million to $50 million, we've also, Mr. Speaker, increased from 75% to 90% the guarantee that government would back small businesses across this province. Mr. Speaker. We continue to provide apprenticeship opportunities for young Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, who are working primarily in small businesses across this province, Mr. Speaker. We are continuing to do what we said we'd do in the election campaign, which is work with small businesses from one end of this province to the other.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition with one supplementary reminder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is fun. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, former Liberal Premier of New Brunswick, Frank McKenna, spoke on Friday about the importance of developing our shale gas onshore resources to develop our region. He said in his speech, which I'll table, and quote, much more could be done by opinion leaders to demystify the extraction industries. Well, the former Liberal Premier of New Brunswick knows a lot about economic development, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Premier, will he now set aside his ban on shale gas in light of what Mr. McKenna is saying, show real leadership, and get on with the job of trying new ways of creating new jobs in this province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the former Premier, Mr. McKenna, for actually saying exactly what this government is doing, Mr. Speaker, which is going from one end of this province, reaching out, Mr. Speaker, to stakeholders, to ensure that we fully understand the ramifications of fracking in this province, and we're going to do so in an open, transparent way, Mr. Speaker. And if we ever frack in this province, it will be done in an open debate, not the way it's structured today, Mr. Speaker, where the minister could do it on his own.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I really encourage the Premier to take a look at the speech I just tabled, because nowhere in that speech does Mr. McKenna say the right thing to do now, with all the economic hardship around us, is to ban one of the new ways of creating new jobs in our province, including shale gas. In fact, what he did say, and I'll quote directly, is that good governments, quote, seize control of the agenda, they communicate, they make decisions, and they lead. Banning new ways of creating jobs is not leadership, Mr. Speaker. Mr. McKenna is actually calling on our region's leaders to lead the development of this new opportunity. He is a proven leader. Why won't the Premier take his advice?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to inform the Honourable Member, I have read the speech, Mr. Speaker, and what former Premier McKenna said was that we need to go out and continue to communicate to ensure that everyone, Mr. Speaker, fully understands the ramifications of fracking. What would happen, Mr. Speaker? That's exactly what this bill provides. The Minister of Energy is doing so. We're going to continue to engage Nova Scotians. We're going to continue to consult, Mr. Speaker, and we'll move forward making sure that not only do we drive good economic development decisions, but we'll do so at the same time protecting the environment.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really do wonder if we read the same speech, because Mr. McKenna actually said, and I quote, "We cannot refuse to exploit our resources and continue to believe that we can balance our budgets, pay our doctors and social workers and other civil servants, and continue to fund a social safety net." That's what Mr. McKenna said in his speech. That's why he is advocating for the development of our onshore shale gas resources. Mr. Speaker, let's ask the Premier, does he agree with Mr. McKenna that developing our onshore resources would help pay for the social services we need? Yes or no?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Mr. McKenna was talking about resource development, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Honourable Member there's $2 billion being invested on the offshore of this province, Mr. Speaker, by Shell and BP. I want to remind the Honourable Member that there's a tremendous amount of mining that's taking place in this province, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to do so. We'll do it in a responsible way. What the Minister of Energy has said and what we're going to continue to do is make sure that we consult with Nova Scotians, that we fully understand the activities that are taking place in this province, Mr. Speaker, and we're going to do so in a responsible way, that if we're going to manage and we're going to exploit the resources, to use the Leader of the Conservative Party's words, we're going to make sure we do so protecting the environment at the same time.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, they are actually the words of Mr. McKenna, who was speaking very specifically about onshore shale gas development. And I just find it very interesting. We have a government that it supports the offshore, as we all do, where we have risks, where we have regulations, where it's working, where real jobs are created, but they won't let the exact same thing happen onshore, despite all the unemployment that we see around us, Mr. Speaker. Mr. McKenna said in his speech, and I quote, "People feel that it is a choice between shale gas and drinking water." He says this is a complete lie, but is constantly repeated. Mr. McKenna knows there is a safe and responsible way to develop this resource and create jobs. So I'll ask the Premier, does he agree with Mr. McKenna that this can be done safely or not?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to remind the Leader of the Conservative Party that's exactly the conversation that the Minister of Energy is having with all Nova Scotians. I want to remind the Leader of the Conservative Party there is a responsibility, there is a duty to consult with the Aboriginal communities across this province, Mr. Speaker. And I want to remind all members of this House, we have fracked wells in this province, and this government is dealing with the fracking waste, Mr. Speaker, that was being ignored by previous governments, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, as everybody in this House well knows, winter is fast approaching, and high energy prices can put a strain on family budgets, and that may force people to choose between heat and eat, Mr. Speaker. But there seems to be some hope on the horizon. Nova Scotia, which historically depends on fossil fuels, and recently we've seen oil prices, and I'll table this, Mr. Speaker, oil prices fall to record lows and nearly levels unprecedented in the last 3 years. So I want to ask the Minister of Environment, when will these huge savings for Nova Scotians be passed down to ratepayers?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's actually a very timely question because we're in the middle of the fuel adjustment mechanism hearings at the moment, and one of the things is we're trying to look at what the impact will be on next year. We know that actually, while we don't use a lot of oil for rates in terms of electricity generation, there is some used at Tufts Cove. We don't anticipate there to be downward pressure on the prices of natural gas in the New England and Maritimes market, so obviously that won't have as much of an impact, but we are looking at the possible impact on drop in coal prices.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again to the Minister of Energy. In April, his government said, and I'll table this, Mr. Speaker, ratepayers can expect to see an overall reduction in their power bill of 4 to 5%. And as I said, I'll table that. Today's oil prices, and it's across the fossil fuel market, we see prices tumbling because the reality is they're linked to one another. So I want to ask the Minister one simple question. When will ratepayers get to participate in this new windfall prices Nova Scotia Power is currently enjoying?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the rates are going down on January 1st, 2015. It's unfortunate that the NDP and the Tories voted against that, but that's what it is. And, Mr. Speaker, we will ensure that ratepayers benefit from not only inaccurate speculation by Nova Scotia Power when that happens, as Liberty has suggested, on natural gas prices, but, quite frankly, on any fossil fuel prices that they get passed on to ratepayers.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. According to a CBC article, as early as mid-July, the Minister of Energy was made aware of planned maintenance on the Deep Panuke offshore platform. I can table that. In September, the Minister tabled her fiscal update and booked a $5 million increase in petroleum revenues. So my question today for the Minister of Finance is, was this planned maintenance of Deep Panuke taken into account when the Department of Finance raised the expected royalty revenue?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I understand that all of the costs were taken into account. When we do an update, the Department of Finance confers with all departments and brings up all the information that we know as of that date.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The planned shutdown can have a significant impact on the production at Deep Panuke. And yet the government banked on increased petroleum revenues despite knowing of the planned maintenance. And here we sit today, and the maintenance has been unexpectedly extended. So for every day that Deep Panuke is offline, the province's royalty revenues are impacted. So my question for the minister is, given the current status of the Deep Panuke, should Nova Scotians expect lower than projected offshore revenues and therefore an increased deficit?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I said, we had already accounted for the information that we had available at the time, and I'm going to let the Minister of Energy say something.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Minister of Finance said, it's taken into account. It was a planned shutdown, and at the end of the day, in fact, if they actually produce more gas to make up in the winter, we would actually benefit on the finances because it is in part based on the royalty price or the commodity price, and the commodity price is higher in the winter.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, the fact that we pay the highest HST in the country is holding Nova Scotians back. In fact, for the August 2013 to 2014 period, Nova Scotia ranked dead last in retail sales growth in Canada. Our 2% growth is dismal compared even to our neighbours in New Brunswick and PEI, where it was both over 5%. So my question for the Minister is, does the Minister of Finance agree that paying the highest HST in Canada hurts business and it hurts ordinary Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I think the member opposite knows very well why we have that 15% HST. It's because each cent that comes off the HST costs $195 million to the revenue of the province. And we're running a very deep deficit, and we need the revenue from that HST. I believe that it's an important factor in our province's functioning.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What a difference 3 years can make, I guess. Mr. Speaker, in November 2013, criticizing the hike in HST, the now Premier rose in his capacity as Leader of the Opposition and said, and I quote, people have less to spend because of this government's poor decision on raising the HST. He then asked the following question. Will the Premier now admit that his HST increase is hurting businesses and making life less affordable for Nova Scotian families? And I'll table that. So, Mr. Speaker, just three years later, will the Minister admit to this House that the Liberal decision to maintain the highest HST in Canada hurts Nova Scotian families as much today as it did 3 years ago?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. We just ran a campaign, Mr. Speaker, where we actually were up front with Nova Scotians and told them we could not afford an HST tax cut at this moment in time, Mr. Speaker. We all know we are running a substantial deficit in this province, and Nova Scotians made a decision. They were not going to take a billion-dollar tax cut that was promised by the Conservative Party. They were going to bet on a government that was going to be up front.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, the NSGEU represents emergency responders, including police officers, social workers, correctional workers, firefighters, and nurses. These are all people you need by your side in time of crisis. Today, the NSGEU issued a press release, which I will table, Mr. Speaker, calling on the government to ensure all workers, emergency responders, workers receive the help they need from workers' compensation when they develop post-traumatic stress disorder. So I'd like to ask the Minister, my question to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education, through you, Mr. Speaker, when will emergency responders see that change?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. In fact, Workers' Compensation Board recently changed their policy on workplace stress and has improved their coverage at this time. Any time that we make any change to our policies on at the Workers' Compensation Board, it does have ramifications, and so any decision to proceed with those would have to be made after due consultation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But there are those emergency responders that aren't covered because of the policy currently with WCB. In the last 7 months, Mr. Speaker, 24 first responders have committed suicide across Canada, and we cannot wait any longer. So I'd like to ask the Minister, when will the Minister of Labour provide automatic coverage through workers' compensation for emergency responders who have been diagnosed with PTSD due to a cumulative exposure to traumatic events?
Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the member opposite would know, the Workers' Compensation Board has recently changed its procedures around this particular issue. There is expanded coverage. Anytime we go to change our coverage, it has a financial impact on the Workers' Compensation Board. Bottom line, as we know, there is a huge unfunded liability. We have been making considerable efforts towards dealing with that, but it is not something that will be solved overnight. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, the document resulting from the 2007 inquiry into the death of Captain Donald LeBlanc at the English Down Ferry recommended that the province, in consultation with stakeholders, draft a new regulation for formal documented hazard assessments. It states that it should establish a reasonable and realistic standard for when a hazard assessment ought to be done, the form it ought to take, the process by which it is completed, and what it ought to include. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's been 7 years since the inquiry was completed, but still regulations have not been passed. My question to the Minister, why haven't the regulations been passed to protect worker safety?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. We've actually been working very closely with our fishing communities, with our our offshore industries to improve safety. We know that for many of our folks who work on the water, the number one issue is, in fact, drowning. That's the number one cause of death. And so we're encouraging, we're working with our fisher folk to get them to wear their PFDs, and we are working very closely with them, doing man overboard drills. There's actually a lot going on at this time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, according to the Workers' Compensation Board's 2013 annual report, in 2013 there were 34 workplace deaths in Nova Scotia, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. The recommendation coming out of the provincial inquiry states the Department of Transportation's hazard assessment document may be something which other government departments could adopt and which may also serve as an example for private sector employees who wish to maintain the highest possible standard of workplace safety. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister commit to reviewing the recommendation and update Nova Scotians before the end of the House sitting?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would note that it appears that governments of all three stripes have been in office since that particular report came forward. What I can tell the Minister is that we're deeply committed to making Nova Scotia the safest place to work in all of Canada. And, Mr. Speaker, I would like to note that that we are making great strides this year. So far, our number of acute deaths have dropped considerably from last year, but that doesn't mean that we are going to relax our vigilance. And in fact, what needs to happen, Mr. Speaker, is there needs to be a sea change that Nova Scotian workers and employers all need to contribute to our increased safety at this time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, last week a fire at the Cape Breton Correctional Centre facility sent four employees to hospital for smoke inhalation. 28 inmates were evacuated from three different areas up to jail. One employee says the situation could have produced fatal results. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Justice is, how serious of an incident does she consider this situation I've just described to be?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much to my colleague for that very important question. Any incident that puts the safety of our staff, our offenders at risk, we consider to be very serious. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, to the Minister of Justice. According to her own department, serious incidents, including purposeful damage to correctional facilities, as well as major disruptions and disturbances requiring emergency police services to respond. Now, the police did respond in this case, matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, as did other emergency vehicles. And long before her time, Mr. Speaker, there was also an incident at that same facility where, when first responders did respond to an incident there, that they were held hostage, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister, it's been a week since this incident took place. The Department of Justice Instant Major Incident Updates webpage continues not to mention it. So through you, Mr. Speaker, if this government is supposed to be so transparent, why is this minister not posting details of this incident from the public?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. We are conducting an internal investigation. As well, the Cape Breton Police is also conducting their own investigation. Can tell the Honourable Member that if there were no offenders that were injured. There were four staff that had inhalation and went to the hospital, but they were not admitted at all. So we do have regulations on the website, and pursuant to those regulations, there were no injuries of this sort that requires us to report these. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle-Barrington.
Thank you very much. In Monday's issue of the Canadian Medical Association's Journal, the Canadian Task Force on Preventative Healthcare recommended that the PSA test should not be used to screen for prostate cancer. This recommendation would be confusing to many Nova Scotian men who have been encouraged to get a PSA for early detection of prostate cancer after the age of 40. So my question to the Minister of Health is, can he update the House on the advice it will give doctors in Nova Scotia regarding PSA screening?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the Honourable Member. At the present time, it is a report that is now available, Cancer Care Nova Scotia and the Prostate Association in particular are maintaining that PSA test has value and will stay in place in our province. Yeah.
The Honourable Member for Argyle-Barrington on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much. First answer of the session is great. Despite the Canadian Task Force on Preventative Healthcare's recommendation, Prostate Cancer Canada believes that the benefits of PSA screening far outweighs the risk and that early detection saves lives. They continue to recommend that when men turn 40, as I suggest there's a number of men over 40 in this House of Assembly, they should get a PSA test. So again, knowing the Minister's commitment, I know the Premier has been co-chairing the Wake Up Breakfast on a number of occasions. So my question to the Minister, what advice does the Minister have for men in Nova Scotia when it comes to PSA testing?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that men in their 40s now asked to have this test available to them. And that is the current thinking. The test will be available to men in Nova Scotia, and at the present time there is really no need to change the practice. Certainly the report will be reviewed, but I can assure all men in Nova Scotia that the test is there.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for the Minister of Health. We've heard a great deal from my colleagues, the MLA for Cape Breton Centre and the MLA from Northside Westmount this session about the situation at Northside Hospital. In the Cape Breton Post today, we're learning that municipal councillors are also calling on the Minister of Health and Authority to explain the escalating ER closures, change to blood collection practices, and staffing shortages. So I'd like to ask the Minister, what is the Minister of Health doing to address local concerns about the Northside Hospital?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think it's very important for myself and the Deputy to review all of the concerns that have arisen over the past year at Northside General, and as soon as the House rises, we will do that on-site investigation.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
So, in other words, Mr. Speaker, we'll delay until the House is finished and then we'll find out what we're going to do about it. Before the Liberal government was elected, Mr. Speaker, we had volunteer health boards who would be the advocates for local hospitals like the Northside, New Waterford, and Roseway, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you, since the Minister has fired the volunteer health boards, who is he relying on to speak up for patients outside of Halifax?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. One of the very clear lessons that I've learned since becoming Minister of Health is that all Nova Scotians speak about the need for certain services, but they also speak about the importance of good health delivery in the province. And I have all the confidence in the current board administrator, George McClellan. We've also heard from physicians and staff at Northside. I'm getting a very good picture of what is taking place, and if there's a need to make changes at Northside, they will be made.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is also to the Minister of Health. The concerns about changes to the services provided at the Northside General Hospital are mounting each day. Doctors have expressed concern about the growing loss of core services. They fear the hospital is going to be transitioned into a long-term care facility. While Cape Breton is in desperate need of spaces for seniors awaiting placement, the Northside General is not a desired location as the services remain important for all residents. The CEO has indicated there are no plans to make that transition, yet the frontline workers are not convinced. So my question to the Minister is, can the Minister confirm there are no plans to convert the Northside General into a long-term care facility?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. You know, all facilities in our province undergo change. We know that lab services in all nine current districts have undergone some degree of change. So that's nothing new that's happening there. But in terms of the future of the hospital, the array of services to be offered, I don't see in the short term a change. There may be a need for more clinicians and support services to make sure that all of the services have all of the requirements to make sure that they're delivered safe and on time.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. The anxiety over the Northside General Hospital has spread from healthcare professionals to members of council and the public. Councillor Clarence Prince voiced concerns that he is hearing and expressed the need for the Minister to speak to residents directly. He said, if these changes are examples of improved care, the Minister of Health has to be notified that we think otherwise. At the present time, I believe the policies for service changes are an embarrassment to the provincial government and an insult to the residents of our community. And I'll table that report, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister commit to holding a public forum when he visits the North Side so residents of the North Side can finally get some answers?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. At the present time, my commitment is to go to Northside when the House rises and to get a full assessment from the key stakeholders who are delivering health care, I think, as the first voice of what the concerns are, what the needs are, and together we will find solutions for the problems that exist there.
The Honourable Member for Argyle-Barrington.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Health. Stats Canada shows Nova Scotia with a suicide rate of 13.9 people per 100,000 in 2009, the third highest rate in Canada compared to the national rate of 11.5% in 2009. A mood disorders of Canadian Society report from 2009 shows 20% or 27% of Nova Scotians have had contact with the health system 1 month prior to dying by suicide, while 55% had contact 1 year before. Mental illness is the second highest leading cause of disability and premature death in Canada. 114 people died from suicide in 2013 here in Nova Scotia, and I'll table that. Will the Minister table a comprehensive report from the Department of Health on mental health wait times in Nova Scotia that we are presently facing?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. He has identified one of the perhaps biggest ongoing concerns in regards to mental health and the interventions that are necessary when people are at a desperate point in their lives. And we know that that needs attention. It also we need to let the public know about wait times and a current statistical picture of that. And indeed, we plan to put those online. And in fact, we're just really weeks away from doing that.
The Honourable Member for Argyle-Barrington on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and through you again to the Minister of Health. An editorial in the Chronicle Herald on August 20th told of a young lady suffering from postpartum depression and asking for mental health help. She worked in what she described as a helping field and having worked in shelters with men and women and children. However, she was turned away at the ER when she asked for mental health assistance. So my question to the Minister, is the Minister aware of how many individuals are being turned away from Nova Scotia hospitals suffering from mental health problems?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have that statistic, but if it happens even in one case, it's one too many. We know that our doctors, a number of them now, have in fact taken training on at least that primary care component to deal with especially depression, anxiety, and also some of these psychoses that turn up in a doctor's office. And I think as that training increases and goes across primary care, we know that we're at a point in time where all clinicians must in fact be educated and know how to start the process of treatment and caring for somebody who is a potential suicide victim.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Internal Services. Earlier today, Mr. Speaker, in talking to the media, the Minister was talking about his some issues around shared services. And he's told the media in particular that there'd be somewhere in the vicinity of $50 to $60 million in savings through this scheme, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister, what percentage of those savings do you anticipate being achieved through FTE reductions?
The Honourable Minister of Internal Services.
Thank you for the question. Mr. Speaker, the majority of the savings on the shared services piece will come through procurement. Our government has identified that there is a large savings opportunity in procurement, and the bulk of the savings will be there. As time goes on over the course of 5 years, 6 years, we will find efficiencies as we collapse departments under internal services, and that's where we will have a reduction in FTEs. The current reduction we expect over that period of time with no layoffs is approximately 200, and all be done through attrition. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and again to the same minister. We've seen in the past, Mr. Speaker, the Liberal governments trying to balance the books on the workers. And we can just go back to their last time in government, how they drove 1,000 nurses away, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask a very simple question. Seems like I hit a nerve. If the Liberal attrition plan didn't work in the past, why will it work today?
The Honourable Minister of Internal Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for the question. The reason this plan will work today is because it's going to be thoughtful and it's going to be over the course of 5 years. I would like to remind the Honourable Member that shared services was actually an NDP initiative. And this was started 2 years ago. And if the Honourable Member remembers, their initiative had 800 layoffs and moving 800 people. And Mr. Speaker, we saw how that government handled moving 40 people. Mr. Speaker, we saw how that government handled moving 40 people and caused great, great anxiety and frustration in the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, this government will handle shared services in a very respectful way to our workforce, and it will be seamless transition, and we will book the $50 to $60 million of savings. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week my colleague asked the Premier a series of questions about the government's plan to provide services for children and adults with autism. He asked the Premier about their failure to act upon promises in the Liberal election platform. Families want to know that this government will honour their commitments and show a clear plan of action to provide the necessary supports. My question to the Minister, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister explain whether or not her department is monitoring the goals in the Autism Action Plan?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member. We certainly have made a commitment to look at how we provide services and supports to anyone on the autism spectrum, whether it is a preschooler, whether it's somebody in our public system, or whether it's adult. And we have made a commitment to go through the 53 recommendations that are there. And in fact, the cross-department meetings continue, because the responsibilities within those 53 recommendations do cover more than one department.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister said that her department is not waiting for the report, that they are taking action. The report was completed in 2011, and we are waiting to see a complete progress update so that families know that the direction the government is taking. We have not seen a single update since the last 12 months. My question to the Minister, can the Minister provide an updated progress report on the Autism Action Plan before the end of this session?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. The support for
autism in our schools certainly began long before this this person became minister, and I will give credit to the previous government for looking at providing supports through autism consultants at the department, autism consultants in the schools, and training for our teachers. So we didn't wait, the previous government didn't wait, and we will continue to provide the supports that those people need.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Environment. We all know that on his desk, one of the biggest files he has, if not the biggest, is the Boat Harbour Treatment Facility issue. And my question is simple. I would just like the Minister to tell us yes or no. Has he toured the facility? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Yes.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, and that makes me so happy to hear that. No, really, we didn't see any information out there that had indicated that he had toured it and had a visual of it. It's a big issue, it's complex, it's delicate, and so I thank him for touring. My next question is, as we know, hand in hand goes the Northern Pulp. I'm wondering if he's had the opportunity to meet management there and tour Northern Pulp as well. Yes or no, please.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I have had the opportunity, Mr. Speaker. The mill management team has asked me to tour the facility in the past. This was actually back in the spring. I provided some parameters around completing that tour, which included extending an invitation to representatives of Clean the Mill as well as Pictou Landing First Nation. They've never come back to me with a commitment to bring those people along. So to this point, I haven't actually toured the facility. I have met with management. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Environment. In 2013, Mr. Speaker, residents of the Trenton area were told that the Minister of Environment, along with the Minister of Energy and the Minister of Health, were committed to forming a task force to examine the effects of fly ash from Nova Scotia Power's generating plant on the environment and overall health of residents. So my question through you to the Minister of Environment, who is on this task force, have they met yet, and how often do they meet?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for the question. I don't recall any commitment for something referred to as a task force. Certainly there was a commitment for the departments to work together. And Mr. Speaker, the ministers, each of us have met and discussed, as well as members from our respective departments at the staff level. We've met, I know myself, I've met on at least two occasions with a representative from the public group really moving forward, expressing their concerns on this particular issue. As indicated, it certainly has been an active issue that we've been looking at, and conversations have continued within our departments.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I will table the article where, in fact, there was a commitment from the Ministers of Health, Environment and Energy, all committed to speaking to Nova Scotia Power and having a task force formed to look into the issue. I will table that. Mr. Speaker, residents of Trenton continue to be fearful of the emissions coming from the Nova Scotia power plant in their community. They say that air quality is a huge problem in the region and they want their concerns addressed. So, can the minister please tell us when the task force will in fact be formed, and will they start consulting with the residents about the quality of their air, and if in fact he has discovered changing the allowable limits of the industrial approval?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you again for the member for the question. I guess I haven't had a chance to see the document table, but again, I would suggest that the article likely makes reference to a task force, not as something that came from the government and our language. So I will take a look at that to see what the parameters are or who was making the commitment or the statements around a task force. With respect to the air quality, certainly I think The issue and the concerns of residents of Pictou County pertaining to air quality is well documented, not just around the notion of the Trenton plant, but also Northern Pulp, as an earlier question has come up. And, Mr. Speaker, I assure you that this department, the Department of Environment, is taking those concerns very seriously as we consider the air quality emissions across the board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, class composition, potential violence, and mental health issues are the most important concerns as the 2014-15 school year ushers in a new year. My question to the Minister, has the Minister's Department provided any additional assistance to help teachers cope with these issues?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. A very important question. Classroom teachers are dealing with a lot of complexities in their classroom. And to answer the member's question, we have worked with the Department of Health to provide 23 mental health clinicians. Those people will be providing supports for our students and also for the teachers. We're providing professional development so our teachers are better able to respond. First of all, to identify and then to respond and to reach out and get the professional help that they need so that they can provide whatever level of support the students in their class may require.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, teachers are known for their incredible work and they make a difference for students. However, teachers across the province continue to cope with class size issues at the upper elementary, junior and senior high levels. Will the Minister address the serious issues classroom teachers face each day with respect to large classroom sizes in grades 7 to 12?
The Honourable Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to respond to the member opposite with respect to support for teachers and how we can help them better identify and provide support, as recently as last week, Mr. Speaker, there were 800 teachers who were in the city receiving professional development so they could better, as I said, identify and provide support for students who were having some level of anguish, mental health, whatever those concerns might be. So we certainly are taking those steps. With respect to class size, I do want to remind the member that this is the government that identified the need to put a cap on class sizes so that teachers would have a manageable number of students in their class. And we began that with the P2 initiative this year with 20 students. And I'm pleased to say that 94% of the school classes were able to cap their class
Order,
size.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to minister has expired. I'm exhausted. It's a great job, guys. Almost 20 questions, so good on you. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, it was 19 questions, and to put that into perspective, that is actually more than we've ever achieved on Opposition Day when we had an hour and a half question period. And as a result, we're reconsidering the rule changes, and we'll be bringing... It wasn't supposed to be this many questions. So. Mr. Speaker, under government business, private and local bills for second...